It was a day of homecoming for the soldier and his young wife. For about a month, 20-year-old Skyler Niemitz had been deployed stateside for training. He returned home on October 16, 2014, to his wife Danielle and their apartment in Lakewood, Washington, about 40 miles south of Seattle. But within hours of their happy reunion, it became a day of tragedy instead.
And what's going on there?
A wife accidentally discharged a rifle, and supposedly she is dead. I saw the husband walk out with blood, and
Okay, so do you know where on her body she was shot at all?
I didn't ask.
19-year-old Danielle Niemitz was dead. Immediately, questions swirled around the investigation. Had Danielle accidentally shot herself, like the concerned neighbor who called 911 said? Or was it a case of an angry husband who murdered his wife? Danielle's death became a national media story, a story about a young wife shot and killed, somehow, in her own home, and the trial of her husband that followed, a trial that would include a prosecution convinced that he was a cold-blooded killer, tearful testimony from the husband describing what he says was a tragic accident, and allegations of prosecutorial misconduct. This is Jillian, and you are listening to Court Junkie, episode 140. They say luxury never sleeps, which is why you need the RealReal app on your phone. The RealReal is the largest and most trusted source for authenticated luxury consignment. On the app, you can shop and sell top designers 24/7 from anywhere. Think Gucci, Hermes, Louis Vuitton, Rolex, and Cartier, all up to 90% off retail. That's 90. Everything is authenticated by a team overseen by luxury experts, and thousands of new items arrive daily. The RealReal app is so much fun. I scroll through it all day long, mostly just to look, but sometimes I find the perfect thing I'm looking for at a price that I like too. With the app, you can save searches for your favorite designers and items in your size, and then watch new items stream in. Plus, you can keep tabs on your favorites. Just click the heart next to any item and add it to your obsessions, which then allows you to share your obsessions with friends and family. Perfect for dropping holiday gifting hints. And you can sell your luxury items too. It's super easy. You just book an appointment on the app, track your items with your personalized My Sales dashboard, and get notifications when your items sell. Download the RealReal app today to shop and sell your favorite luxury brands and get 20% off select items by using the code REAL. Plus, new shoppers get $25 off their first purchase. Available on the App Store or Google Play. Get the RealReal app today. Did you know that 80 million men and women in the U.S. experience thinning hair? It's common, even normal, but it's not openly talked about. So going through it can feel lonely and frustrating. It's time to change that and to join the thousands of people now using Nutrafol. Nutrafol is formulated with potent botanicals to help you grow hair as strong as you are. And it's physician formulated to be 100% drug-free. They use natural, clinically effective botanicals for better hair growth through whole body health. Does it work? Yes. In clinical studies, 72% of men saw more scalp coverage and 86% of women saw improved hair growth after 6 months. Visit Nutrafol.com and take their hair wellness quiz for customized product recommendations that put the power to grow thicker, stronger hair back into your hands. You can grow thicker, healthier hair and support our show by going to Nutrafol.com and using the promo code COURT to get 20% off. This is their best offer available anywhere. Plus, free shipping on every order. Get 20% off at Nutrafol.com and use the promo code COURT. Their best offer anywhere. 20% off at Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol. .com, promo code COURT. For hair as strong as you are. Ben and Nina Bergmark were on their couch watching a show on Netflix when they heard a weird noise, a pop. They paused the show and Ben decided to look outside. He stepped out of his apartment and at first he didn't see anything. But 15 seconds later, he heard screaming coming from the apartment next door, only a few feet away from his home. The sounds were haunting, blood-curdling screaming, like something bad had just happened, Ben told authorities as he described how he knocked on his neighbor, Skylar Niemitz's door. He recalled Skylar opening the door, looking like he had just seen a ghost. Skylar told Ben his wife had just shot herself while cleaning a rifle, and she was gone, according to the police report. Skylar spoke incoherently and babbled. Here's what Ben remembered.
It took a couple times, like me knocking and being like, hey, open up, what's going on? Just trying to get his attention and the focus away from whatever he was doing from screaming.
Okay. Walk us through it. Give us as much detail as you can. We weren't there. You were there.
So he opens the door and his face is flushed, like super white. And he was like, he was just like, just talking, just babbling. And he was like, he was just in shock of from whatever happened. I didn't know what happened at that time. And here's where it gets fuzzy. I can't remember that far back. Like I'm trying to remember. I know there was questions like, and there was answers like it was an accident. And I don't know whether he was saying that it was that he did it was an accident or like what type of accident it was. So it was, and verbal discussions had gone through and I was like, hey, do I need to come in here? And he's like, no, she's not moving. So then my next question was like, is she dead? And it took him like a couple seconds to respond. And he's like, yeah, she's dead. You don't want to see her. I love my wife and I wouldn't want you to see her. So we bring him initially out of the apartment, and I don't know how many times he went back and forth into the apartment. Nina's on the phone, calling the police, and they're just getting more and more information. And Skylar, I guess he goes in there one of the times, and he comes back with blood on his shirt. There was no blood on his shirt before. There's no blood spatter or whatever. It was a white shirt, so I would have been able to notice like, oh, that's really weird. That's not a normal thing to be on there. But once he did come back out later on, there was blood on his shirt, and he's just continually freaking out. He's like, I love her, and like, he's just babbling on, just uncontrollably.
At 6 p.m., the Lakewood Police Department began receiving calls about the shooting at the Beaumont Grand Apartments. The information was conflicting in those first few chaotic moments about who was shot and who had done the shooting, as multiple people, including Ben, called 911. Neighbors stood outside looking up at the third floor as the police arrived on scene. Patrol officer Mark Holthaus watched Skylar Niemitz walk out, appearing distraught, according to the police report. He noticed Skylar was wearing a white t-shirt that had what looked to be blood marks on it, but he was more focused on trying to figure out which apartment Skylar had emerged from. Skylar was taken into custody. He tried talking to Officer Daryl Moore. I need to tell someone my story, he said. Officer Moore ignored him. The most important thing now was for medical personnel to help Danielle. Officer Moore's job was to direct the fire personnel team. He would later report that Skylar said he was positive his wife was dead and there was no helping her. Officer Moore stared at Skylar, silent, as Skylar just kept talking, giving his unprompted version of events. Quote, Skylar went on to say that he was in Yakima, Washington for field training with the military. Skylar said he returned home to his wife. Skylar said he loves his wife more so than most other men. Skylar said his love for her was special. Skylar continued on with his story and stated that he returned home from Yakima and had left his wife with his rifle for her protection when he was gone. Skylar told me that he took out the magazine slash clip and motioned taking out the magazine slash clip. Skylar said he was making the rifle safe, and for some reason, he grabbed the rifle and shook it. I watched as Skylar demonstrated grabbing what I believed to be the upper portion of the rifle with his left hand and the lower portion of the rifle with his right hand. Skylar motioned holding the rifle at an approximate 45-degree angle. Skylar said, "I just shook it and it shot her." The police entered apartment 301, checking every room in the small unit until they reached the guest bedroom. There was Danielle, seated at a chair facing a Mac computer that had a broken screen from a single bullet. Danielle's head was slumped down. She had been shot in the back of the head. A large amount of blood had pooled under her chair. She had no pulse. At 6:19 p.m., she was pronounced dead at the scene. Who was Danielle Nemitz? Her biography depicts someone who fought through hard times since the very beginning. She was born 4 weeks premature and weighed less than 3 pounds. She wasn't expected to live through the night, but she proved everyone wrong. Danielle, whose first name was actually Tara, although she preferred to go by Danielle, was a cheerleader in high school and adored experimenting with makeup. By all accounts, she was energetic and happy-go-lucky, a personality that was quite remarkable, considering all the loss she had experienced. Nearly all the parental figures in her life passed away while Danielle was young, starting with her mother, who got sick and passed away when she was just 2 years old. Then, her grandma died when Danielle was 14. And finally, her stepfather, who adopted Danielle, died when she was 18, after Danielle was already with Skylar, according to court documents. That's the backdrop as Danielle and Skylar first met through Facebook. They attended rival high schools in California. They had only known each other for 2 months when they decided to get married. The following is from a letter Danielle's great aunt read out loud in court. Danielle was just 17 when she would announce she was getting married. We all pleaded with her to wait until she graduated, and since her dad wouldn't give his permission, she was forced to wait until she turned 18. She thought she was going to live a fairy tale life. We all voiced our concerns that when she turned 18, there was no stopping her. She left to marry Skylar. Danielle and Skylar moved to Washington State, near the Fort Lewis Army Base. She was now an Army wife. For fun, the couple went target shooting or on double dates to the movies and out to dinner. Danielle was ready to start a family. Her dream was reportedly to own a nail salon, and she was an aspiring YouTuber as well.
Hey, so this is my makeup collection video. I thought it'd be a fun way to start out my life here on YouTube, is show all you beautiful people my makeup collection. So, as it is, let's jump on it.
Danielle's family mourned how her bubbly presence was now gone from their lives. Her old high school classmates back in McKinleyville, California, held a candlelight vigil. Her sister dyed her hair purple in honor of Danielle's favorite color. While walking through Danielle and Skylar's apartment, Officer Holthouse noticed an AR-15-style rifle in the master bedroom's closet. A silver-colored .223 shell casing was on the floor near the door of the guest bedroom. The Major Crimes Unit began processing evidence. Meanwhile, Skylar sat on the bumper of Officer Thomas Rodriguez's police car. Officer Rodriguez later wrote in the police report, quote, "As I stood near Nemitz, he asked me if his wife was gone. I told him I thought so, but that the fire department was still with her. Nemitz was making sobbing sounds and stated, 'I don't know why I can't cry. I noticed Nemitz's cheeks were dry, and I saw no tears.' Nemitz then stated, 'It was an accident.' He paused and then stated, I'm a bad man. I'm a bad man. I did not say anything to Niemitz. Lakewood police officer Mike Wolf drove Skyler to the station for questioning at 6:43 p.m. On the ride, Skyler sat in the police car where he was recorded and filmed. According to the police report, the officer told him that his every move was being watched, and the officer also informed Skyler of his Miranda rights, since he seemed eager to talk with the officer on the ride to the station. Skyler sat in the back seat of the car, his hands handcuffed behind him, rambling at times and screaming. He still wore the white t-shirt with the blood marks on it.
I need to speak to somebody like a chaplain.
You guys want to bring me up?
I love being in the military. I love being in the army. I love my wife. I love my family. I love my friends. I would never hurt any of them. I'm innocent. I didn't mean to hurt anybody. Please, John. God forgive me. I love my wife so much. I was going to clear it. I was going to put it away. And I was going to come up behind her. I was going to kiss her on the neck. And I was going to tell her I loved her. My wife is dead because of a firearms accident. I'm going to go to prison the rest of my life. I'm never going to live again. I'm going to get kicked out of the military. I'm not going to be in the military. I never meant to hurt you. I love you so much, Danielle.
Police canvassed the apartment building. One neighbor, Heather Threkeld, who lived on the second floor, just below the Niemitzes, didn't hear gunshots but remembered the sounds of thumping, like someone was running in the apartment above hers, and then a man yelling, "Oh my God." Then she distinctly heard the toilet flushing twice in a row from that same apartment. Meanwhile, police obtained a search warrant, a receipt for a dozen roses purchased the day before, October 15th, was found in a black purse on the dining room table. There was pizza left out on the kitchen counter, along with a pizza delivery receipt. They also found an empty bottle of Fireball Cinnamon Whiskey and one empty bottle of Sailor Jerry Spiced Rum in a thick brush behind a wooden fence. It looked as though they had been thrown off the Niemitz's balcony. Prosecutors would use the alcohol as a possible motive later on. Once Skyler was in custody, his interview with the homicide detectives began. He said Danielle had picked him up from the base and he was so happy to see her. Back at their apartment, they ate Domino's pizza. He drank a whiskey drink and then watched G.I. Jane on TV with the dogs while Danielle finished office work on the computer. The couple had been intimate together too, Skyler said, recounting the last day of his wife's life. He said Danielle asked him to put away his AR-15 rifle, although he didn't do it right away, he told police. Danielle FaceTimed one of her girlfriends who greeted Skyler. He smiled and waved. He seemed happy to be back at home, the friend noticed. After Danielle's call ended, Skyler remembered walking into the office where his wife was working and telling her how cute she looked. He said he then picked up the rifle, and for some reason, he turned the selector switch from safe to fire. According to the police report, Skyler, quote, removed the magazine from the birdcage, placed the butt of the rifle against his thigh, and the AR-15 rifle fired a round that struck Danielle. Skyler was unsure why the AR-15 rifle fired and why he put the selector switch on fire. The detectives pointed out that a gun doesn't fire unless the trigger is pulled. Skyler argued that some guns do. Skyler's account started to evolve. Now he said his finger was on the trigger as he tried to clear the rifle. Quote, Skyler said he picked up the AR-15 rifle, turned the selector switch from safe to fire. He possibly shouldered the AR-15 rifle and pulled the trigger. Skyler said he did all this while the AR-15 rifle was pointed at the back of Danielle's head. Skyler was unable to remember if he shouldered the AR-15 rifle or if he placed the buttstock in the center of his chest, but it was not on his thigh as he originally described. The frustration in the detectives' voices was clear as they accused Skyler of changing his story of how the gun went off.
Was there ever a time that you found a message or you believed that she was ever having an affair on you? This is super important because we're out there talking to some other detectives and stuff. The trajectory of that round doesn't match up from the entrance to the exit wound. Doesn't add up to what you told us. Okay, so I want to make sure. What it says is it doesn't add up to what you told us. So what I want you to do is make sure you're telling me the right thing. Yeah. If you saw that, you're a gun dude, man. You got gun parts there. You can build an AR.
When that round went off, I thought it was on my thigh. I think it might have even been on my breast or my shoulder. I don't know. I remember that round went off. I know. Don't. When you give me that look, it makes me injure myself.
One of the officers said he's concerned about the changing stories.
I know the magazine was not in the weapon.
The magazine wasn't in the weapon.
Well, there was a fucking bullet in the chamber. That's obvious. And so this
you
is
have
the
to
thing.
Attack me with this.
No, no, I'm not attacking you, man. I understand that, son, and I'm trying to figure out why. And so far, your story's changing a little bit, and I'm concerned about that because if you were pissed off. If you're just really mad and you pointed the gun and you pulled a trigger out of a fit of passion or rage, that's one thing. But to sit there as a professional soldier and lie to me, that's another thing. That makes you two categories. One guy that had a fucking split second of a stupid mistake or of anger versus a guy that's a calculated murderer. And I want to figure out which one of those you are.
Skyler said there was no anger towards his wife at all. He didn't do it on purpose. He stood up to demonstrate what he said happened.
It was on my middle of my chest or my shoulder. It was up high, okay? My hand, it might have, I don't remember if it was, that's the thing I do not, I think it was on the fucking trigger because that fucker went off, okay? But I'm telling you, there is no anger towards my wife at all. There was no anger. I was.
Were you playing with a gun and you just pulled the magazine out and you go click because you thought it was going to go click and it went bang? Is that the difference? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, it went off.
I know it went off, but did you intentionally pull the trigger and it went off because you were fucking with the gun, playing with it, and you stuck it to the back of her head and you pulled the trigger and you didn't know that.
Stuck it to the back of her head.
Okay, so tell me what happened.
I was holding the weapon. I took the magazine out, okay? I took the fucking magazine out. I put the weapon on fire, and I pulled the trigger, okay? Because I thought the weapon was clear already. Because it just imprinted in my mind, I thought the weapon was clear because I never chambered it, and I never thought she touched it. And the magazine wasn't in the magwell. So I made me think, why the fuck would there be a round in the fucking in the fucking chamber? So, whatever. I took the round, the rifle. I pulled the fucking trigger when I was on fire and it went off and it struck my wife in the back of the head and it killed my wife.
One of the investigators asked again why it was pointed at Danielle's head.
I don't know why it was pointed at her head. I really don't. It was just, I think I was moving too fast for my own good, faster than I thought I could actually move when I was trying to clear that weapon myself. I didn't intentionally point at her head. It was in the direction, and I wasn't paying attention to what direction. I knew I was behind her. I knew that she was sitting at the desk, okay? And I knew that, you know, the rifle was pointing that direction. I was not thinking straight, and I just did it out of reaction, just quick. And I grabbed the rifle, cleared it, grabbed it, bam, went off. And I did not intentionally
aim at her head. Let's stop right there.
Okay.
Bam, it went off. You shouldered the fucking gun, put it to the back of your wife's head, and pulled the fucking trigger, and she died.
On purpose.
They pointed out that as a military officer, he should know better. Again, they told him he was changing his story.
You keep changing the story when you realize...
I'm just adding more details.
Stop. When you realize it's not working, you change your story. And so then we finally got out that it was shouldered. You had your finger in the trigger because we know guns don't go off without your finger in the trigger. We've gotten all that. We just haven't gotten to the why.
They then asked what he was flushing down the toilet.
There's another thing. After the neighbor heard the gunshot go off, they heard the toilet flush twice from your apartment. What were you flushing?
The alcohol I had. She got me that Fireball. And I just was really worried. I don't know why. I was really worried it happened. And
why were you flushing the alcohol?
What?
Why were you flushing the alcohol?
Because I'm not 21. And I was just really scared.
Your wife was dead with a bullet in the back of her head, and you're worried about getting a misdemeanor ticket?
Yeah, no. I was just really...
After the gun went off, Skylar said he was scared. His ears were ringing. He threw the gun he had fired into the bedroom closet and knocked the magazines off the bed. But did you call 911? Did you perform CPR? Did you use the skills you learned from the military and tie a home tourniquet to stop the bleeding? The detectives asked. She's hurt, man, one detective said. I think that's the first thing I would have done. I wouldn't have done anything else.
First thing you want to do is hide the magazines. You knock them off the floor, onto the floor, and kick them under the bed. So you're altering the crime scene. You're altering the fucking scene.
This tells me somebody that acted out of rage and out of anger. You acted out of rage and out of anger. You shot your wife in the back of the head. And then after you did it, you realized what you did and realized, oh my God, this is permanent. How stupid was I to do this? Now what am I going to do to cover this up? What can I come up with? That's what this tells me.
Skylar insisted he hadn't meant to kill her.
No. Your wife deserves the right answer, man. Not this fucking
she
bullshit.
Does deserve the right answer.
Then tell it.
My wife. I did not kill her.
You did
I did kill her. I was not angry at her. I was not mad. I did not intentionally mean to murder my wife.
Skylar adamantly denied he wasn't seeking revenge. Danielle wasn't cheating on him. Skylar wanted to be a professional soldier and go to Ranger school someday. All along, Danielle was a supportive wife, texting him encouragement. He insisted the shooting was an accident. Skylar was asked about the receipt for a dozen roses found in Danielle's purse. He said she had bought them for a coworker to give to his wife who was having a bad day. She's nice like that, Skylar said. But doesn't that bother you that Danielle's male coworker was sharing details of his marriage with your wife? The detectives asked Skylar. They were beginning to suspect that their motive could be jealousy. When Skylar returned home, Danielle had a bottle of cinnamon whiskey waiting to make him a drink, the alcohol that Skylar later dumped down the toilet. A coworker had purchased that for 19-year-old Danielle, which detectives also called strange. Wouldn't that bother Skylar too? Someone buying booze for his wife?
And you're out in the field with the guys, and the guys are probably talking stories. I'm sure there's all kinds of horror stories about what wives do while guys are...
It's called a Jody story.
Jody story all over the place, man.
Yeah. And then the mind's a terrible thing. The mind just kind of takes over, kind of becomes, creates its own monster, right?
Okay, I understand where you're going with this, but I don't think she did. Okay. I don't think she did.
I'm not saying she did either. I'm just trying to figure this out. I'm trying to figure out what's going on in your mind.
I was okay with her not doing it. I was thinking, yeah, she probably didn't do that. But now with the receipt for a dozen roses that aren't in the fucking house... And a co-worker, she gave them to her, the co-worker's wife. Now I'm having a hard time with that.
Doesn't seem very believable.
During the interview, Skylar gave the police the code to open his gun safe that he kept in his bedroom. They asked how he was able to afford to buy 14 guns on his soldier's salary. Skylar said he inherited some of the guns from his grandfather, and some were owned by a friend. He said all of the guns were legal. Guns were a hobby for Skylar. He liked to go to the shooting range on base. Danielle liked shooting too, he said. He had bought her a blue gun as a gift. After his interview, investigators weren't convinced of his innocence. In fact, after his interview, he was charged with first-degree murder. They believed he had intentionally murdered his wife. It's the holiday season. You know, the season that really knows how to lighten your wallet. So if you're looking for a fast and easy way to put some money back in your pocket, why not reshop your home and auto insurance rates with Policy Genius? Policy Genius combines a cutting-edge insurance marketplace with help from licensed experts and their home and auto customers save an average of $1,000 per year. Plus, it's really easy to use. First, head on over to policygenius.com and answer a few quick questions about yourself and your property. Then, sit back and let Policy Genius do the rest. They'll compare rates from over 30 top insurers, from Progressive to Nationwide, to find the lowest quotes. Their licensed experts will look at all the ways to maximize your savings, including bundling your home and auto policies. If Policy Genius finds a better rate than what you're currently paying, they'll get you switched for free. Policy Genius has earned 5-star ratings across over 1,600 reviews on Trustpilot and Google. So if you're feeling the pinch during the holiday season, find out how much you could save on home and auto insurance at policygenius.com. They've saved their home and auto insurance customers an average of $1,000 a year by reshopping. Policy Genius, when it comes to insurance, it's nice to get it right. Coloring your hair in the comfort of your own home is something a lot of people are doing nowadays. But you might be wondering how you would find the right color, and then what about the cost? Well, Madison Reed makes coloring your hair at home affordable, and they give you the tools you need to choose your perfect color. Madison Reed takes coloring your hair at home to the next level and gives you beautiful professional hair color that's delivered right to your door, starting at just $22. For decades, there were only two options for coloring your hair. You could either try outdated at-home color or spend time and money at a salon. But not anymore. Madison Reed's color is unique. It's crafted by master colorists who blend nuances of light, dark, cool, and warm tones to create over 55 gorgeous multidimensional shades. And finding the perfect shade is easy. You just go to their website, madison-reed.com, and take their quick online quiz that will ask you all sorts of questions about your hair, like what you want your end result to be and what your hair texture is. Then they match you with your perfect shade. Now, Court Junkies can get 10% off plus free shipping on their first color kit by using the code COURT. Go to madison-reed.com and use the code COURT. That's madison-reed.com and use the code COURT. To find out more about the couple's relationship and what happened before the shooting, the Lakewood Police Department also interviewed the Niemitz's neighbors, friends, coworkers, and family members as part of their investigation. They interviewed Jordan Marshall, who was in the same army unit as Skylar, and Jeremiah Hale, their squad leader. What police gleaned was that Skylar had served in the army for 2 years and was considered a good soldier without any disciplinary issues. He was thought of as generally upbeat and happy. During those 2 years, Skylar hadn't gone overseas or served any combat tours, but he had been gone on a 28-day training deployment and had just returned that day, October 16th. Investigators also learned additional details about Skylar during their investigation, some that didn't exactly fit with their theory of the shooting. Skylar was always safe with handling guns. He was also excited to be going home to his wife. The couple seemed stable and had no financial problems. In fact, they were saving money to move out of the apartment and buy a house, according to the police report. In November, investigators traveled to California to interview Danielle's friends from her hometown. They met with Danielle's childhood friend, Samantha Minton, who gave them background on the couple's relationship. Danielle and Skylar's quick relationship and marriage after just 2 months troubled Samantha. Danielle was moving fast and seemed too young to get married, Samantha worried. Samantha told the investigators she saw other things that seemed odd about the newlyweds. For example, when Danielle came to visit, Skylar dropped her off all day and then went to see his friends. Samantha also gave authorities a helpful clue. Danielle had talked to her best friend, Michaela Yingling, a few hours before her death. Samantha gave police Michaela's contact information. Michaela confirmed she had spoken with Danielle shortly before the shooting. Danielle and Michaela were the kind of best friends who FaceTimed every day and did their makeup together in the mornings. On their last conversation together on October 16th, Skylar smiled and waved to Michaela. Nothing seemed wrong, Everything appeared normal, just like any other day. Danielle had never given Michaela any reason to believe Skylar was abusive, Michaela said. Although she did say Skylar broke Danielle's cell phone, she wasn't sure why. Danielle wouldn't say anything bad about Skylar, although sometimes Michaela was suspicious. She wondered if Danielle was painting a false picture of a happy, loving relationship. She recalled that Skylar refused to let Danielle go to his best friend's baby shower, and he seemed to continuously change his mind about Danielle needing to get a job. He would tell her to go get one, and then once Danielle started to look, he would tell her that she didn't need to work. Skylar hid guns throughout the couple's apartment, under the couch, behind the doors. Firearms Danielle could use for her protection when he was gone, Michaela told police. After referencing Danielle's background of having lost her mother and stepfather, Michaela said all Danielle ever wanted was for someone to love her and take care of her. She said Danielle believed she had found her protector and companion in Skylar. There were two men in Danielle's social circle, although Michaela insisted there were no romantic intentions there. Danielle would never cheat on Skylar, and she was sure of it. The first man was Danielle's boss at her new job. Michaela said he used to be an underwear model, and Danielle thought he was cute. He and Danielle had gone out to dinner together before. Another friend, Jeremy Henry, had gone to the same high school as Danielle. He tutored her in math, and Michaela said he would sometimes stay the night in the guest bedroom when Skylar was out of town. Investigators tracked down 19-year-old Jeremy to hear it firsthand. He grew up in Northern California and had known Danielle for years since grade school. They had dated off and on, but were so close, they decided to just stay good friends. Jeremy called Danielle his mini-me. Jeremy had been stationed at the nearby base in Washington, and he said Skylar didn't like that he was still in Danielle's life.
He didn't trust her being around other guys. He didn't personally like me. I met him a couple times. I didn't really approve of it because she didn't really know him long enough, but it was to get her away from home because she didn't have a really stable situation back home. So.
Right. Did you ever know her to have bruises or marks from where you hit her or anything like that?
I never saw them, but she did mention them to me. And
what did she say to you about that?
She pretty much told me that when he drinks, he becomes abusive.
Right. But let me just clarify something. I'm an old guy. I'm almost 51 years old. How old are you?
I'm 19.
19. Okay, so when you say pretty much, to me that sounds like you're leaving detail out. It may not be.
Right.
But just so I understand, when you say pretty much, are you saying that when he drank, he was abusive? Or are you saying sometimes when he drank, he was abusive?
Sometimes when he drank.
Okay, because that's real important. I don't want to paint him as a picture of being an asshole all the time if he was just a part-time asshole.
I totally understand. Okay. I don't physically know, but it's just...
What she told you.
She has told me.
Okay, so tell me what she told you about that.
He tends to hit her, slap her. I guess it all kind of depends on what he's drinking. Usually it's just hard alcohol. It just puts him off.
When he drinks hard alcohol?
Yes, sir.
Do you think that did you ever fear that he would kill her?
I never thought it would happen.
But 19, you're not supposed to think like that.
No, not at all. Due to how she felt about him, I never thought he would do that.
But despite the fact that Skylar didn't approve of his wife hanging out with her guy friend, that wasn't enough of a deterrent to stop Jeremy from hanging out with Danielle. The night before the shooting, Jeremy and Danielle texted each other, confirming plans for him to come over and help her with her math homework so she could graduate. Investigators also spoke with Danielle's two sisters, who described her as happy, outgoing, and loving. Ashley McLaughlin, Danielle's oldest sister, agreed with what Danielle's best friend had said. Danielle never made any allegations that Skylar was abusive to her. The problems that Danielle and Skylar had in their marriage seemed like the normal growing pains of a young couple. If the marriage ever became bad, Danielle knew she could live with her big sister, Ashley said. Ashley also doubted Danielle would ever cheat on Skylar. But Michaela Ripien, Danielle's youngest sister, told a different story, one that seemed to corroborate what Jeremy had said. Michaela said Danielle always wore long-sleeved shirts and turtleneck sweaters, and she remembered what she thought were bruises in the shapes of fingerprints on Danielle's arms. The trial hadn't started yet, but Pierce County prosecuting attorney Mark Lindquist appeared in the national spotlight talking about his upcoming case. On December 3rd, 2014, he went on Nancy Grace to discuss Skylar's alleged motive in the shooting. He said he thinks the motive was jealousy, that Skylar was angry, whether it was over an actual affair or an imagined one, and that Skylar's claims of it being an accident didn't make sense. I don't think there's a jury out there that will say, maybe she was cheating and therefore this is manslaughter, he said. On the contrary, they will say that's motive for murder. Finally, in January 2016, nearly 2 years after Danielle's death, Skylar's murder trial began in a Tacoma, Washington courtroom. Taking the stand throughout the trial would be neighbors, police, and friends of the couple. The jury also heard Skylar's recorded statements with law enforcement. Michael Newtown, Danielle's boss at the Granite Transformation Construction Company, testified that Danielle was hired about 5 weeks before her death. The company didn't have a local office, so the two met at restaurants, emailed, and called regularly to communicate about business. Michael denied having a sexual relationship with Danielle. He didn't feel that way towards her, he testified. We were friends, he said. We would joke around and laugh, but there was never anything romantic. Michael knew, however, that Danielle had told another mutual acquaintance that she found him attractive. On the day Danielle died, Michael remembered telling her to stop working. He knew her husband was coming home. Go enjoy your time with him, he told her. Anthony Foss, one of Skylar's friends in the Army, described how Skylar was probably one of the best with weapons of anyone that he met during his military career. He talked about it quite a bit, he said. He loved his weapons. Once, he said Skylar caught Danielle in a lie. She was drinking with Anthony's wife while their husbands were deployed. Anthony remembered Skylar's reaction, what he did when he got mad. He kind of does this bobblehead thing, as we called it. Like he kind of shakes his head back and forth, kind of gets his fists up, Anthony said. When he was getting ready to come home, Skylar asked Anthony if he would purchase a bottle of Fireball and Sailors for him. Remember, Skylar was only 20 and Danielle was 19. Anthony was of legal age, but it slipped his mind and he forgot. Danielle ended up getting a male friend to buy the alcohol for her. But Anthony said Skylar had no idea. He thought Anthony purchased it. He said, thanks for buying me the bottles. And I told him I didn't, Anthony testified. I just told him that somebody else bought them for you. I don't know who, but somebody else bought you the bottles, your wife the bottles. I told him she already had them. And how did he respond to that? The prosecutor asked. He wasn't happy, Anthony said. What do you mean he wasn't happy? The prosecutor pushed for more detail. Anthony said Skylar did what he normally did when he was angry, that same head bobble. He just kind of did his little head shake thing, then went straight to his car, Anthony said. 2 hours later, Danielle was dead. Detective Brian Johnson analyzed the cell phones belonging to the Niemitzes and read dozens of their text messages in court. In their text message exchanges, the couple argued about money. For example, Skylar was worried about living paycheck to paycheck and wanted Danielle to get a job. They also argued about other men. Skylar didn't want Danielle to be in communication with other men, even her childhood best friend, Jeremy. On August 29th, about 2 months prior to Danielle's death, Skylar texted her, "Are you buying shit? Because we don't have much money for the next couple weeks." Can I have like $50? If not, that's fine, Danielle replied. No, not really, no, Skylar wrote back. In September, Danielle texted Skylar, saying she had signed up for a free Amazon Prime trial membership, but that instead, Amazon charged her right away. She told Skylar she had successfully canceled it. Skylar's response back was, Danielle, what the fuck? We have Amazon. You don't need the Prime shit. Come on, can you ask me before you do shit with my money? Thanks. I'm about to take your card and cut it up. Skylar also got upset with Danielle after another mail posted on her Facebook wall. Skylar, I have no idea what this is about. I don't know why he posted on my wall. I'll find out, okay? She responded. Jeremy, a source of irritation for Skylar, also got brought up in the argument. I didn't go on a date with anyone, Danielle texted Skylar. I hung out with someone who I have been friends with since I was little. Jeremy would never post anything like that on my wall, and he has a girlfriend. You either have insecurities you need to work on, or you don't trust me when it comes to hanging out with Jeremy. Okay, whatever. I know how other guys operate, and you would obviously be surprised what guys here do, Skylar texted. Then you don't trust me is what you're saying, Danielle wrote back. I didn't say that, but I'm sure you wouldn't be so happy-go-lucky if I was talking to other women, Skylar responded. Other times, their messages were sweet. They shared I love yous or texted each other grocery shopping lists. Two young people living a domestic life, on their own together for the first time. Danielle poured her heart into one message while she couldn't sleep. Skylar was apparently away on military training. Quote, I keep thinking about when we first met, our first date, our first sleepover, first I love you, your proposal. These are just a few of my thoughts. You have always been there for me through so many things. I'm a lucky person because I found a beautiful soul like you, someone who is pure and is full of love. Every day when I see your face, I fall in love with you all over again. I love you, Skylar Nemitz, and I am so proud to call you my best friend, to be able to spend the rest of my life with someone like you. With the jury outside the courtroom, the defense argued in front of the judge that as a matter of law, there was insufficient evidence presented of premeditation. Michael Stewart, Skylar's attorney, said the text messages don't prove anything and that they don't rise above the normal bickering or squabbles of a young couple trying to make their way. He said the other things are pure conjecture and that even if Danielle had an affair, and there's no evidence that she did, there's no indication that Skylar was even aware of that on October 16th. I believe that the evidence shows that this is an accident, he said. I think that's what the evidence shows. I don't know the state can make a case of premeditation at all. But Deputy Prosecutor Jared Ossier pointed to the circumstantial evidence, pointing out that the argumentative text messages were from exactly 1 month before Danielle was killed. That 1 month before she was killed, they were arguing about her relationship with Jeremy. And he said Anthony Foss's testimony shows that Skylar was upset with Danielle about not being honest about who provided the alcohol. In the end, the judge sided with the prosecution. The trial would continue, and the jury could consider first-degree murder. Front and center at the trial were Skylar's guns. Outside of the jury's presence, Judge Jack Nevin debated what evidence would be allowed in, and he acknowledged that a big part of this case was the use of firearms. In court testimony, the jury learned that Skylar was 4 years old when he fired his first gun, 11 when he fired his first AR-15, 12 when he owned his first AR-15, and then in his later years, he began building AR-15s. Authorities conducted a forensic investigation of Skylar's phone and found more than 300 photographs of weapons. There were also 17 videos of Skylar and Danielle firing AR-15s and other guns at indoor and outdoor shooting ranges. Danielle was hitting the target on some of her shots. She knew how to shoot too, as there was speculation whether Danielle improperly handled the gun before Skylar took hold of it, before the shooting. The prosecution's intention with all the testimony about guns was to show that Skylar wasn't a novice with guns. It was a serious hobby for him, backed up, of course, by his military career and military training. Skylar was an expert in safely handling guns. Therefore, according to the prosecution, Danielle's death couldn't have been an accident. Skylar knew what he was doing. Johann Schumann, a forensic scientist at the Washington State Patrol Crime Laboratory, examined the weapon that delivered the mortal wound to Danielle. He conducted tests, trying to determine if the gun and cartridge operated correctly. He said he did a trigger pull analysis that came up normal for that type of gun. He went to the shooting range and fired it 6 times. Each time, nothing was wrong. In his analysis, he said the force of your finger pulling the trigger on the gun would be the equivalent of picking up about a 3/4 gallon of milk with one finger. The safety on the gun was also working properly. He said, to be able to fire this gun, you would have to take it off of safe if the gun was cocked, and then apply trigger pull to it to be able to fire. He was not given a magazine to test. He conducted another test to see if the gun could discharge on accident if it was dropped, but not in this case, he said. Does that mean it did not fire without pulling the trigger? The prosecutor asked. That's correct, sir, he said. It did not fire without pulling the trigger. On cross, the defense asked if it's conceivable that a firing pin could stick. It can happen, Schumann said. He then went on to describe how a bullet ricocheted and he was struck in the foot during an accident when another firearms examiner didn't know the firing pin was stuck. Dr. Thomas Clark, the Pierce County medical examiner, testified Danielle had a gunshot wound that entered the back of her head. He said the bullet had gone at a high velocity, fragmenting and breaking off into small pieces in her head, creating a snowstorm lead pattern. He examined 2 exit wounds by her left eye. Detective Brian Johnson testified that because of those 2 exit wounds, there was not a clear bullet path, and he could not determine the bullet's trajectory. Dr. Clark also did not find gunshot residue on Danielle's body. Detective Johnson said that meant the shot came from 3 feet or more away. During the autopsy, the medical examiner said he did not see any sperm while doing a vaginal swab. There was also no alcohol or drugs found in her system. He classified her death as a homicide. Some of the more questionable evidence at trial was the video of Skylar sitting in the back of the police car soon after the shooting, the one you heard earlier in this episode, where Skylar was often rambling, where he asked for a chaplain and fretted about getting kicked out of the military. The prosecution didn't want it to come in, but the defense did. I can tell you in looking at this video, it's one of the strangest videos I've ever seen of a person's demeanor, Deputy Prosecutor Gregory Greer said to the judge on February 3rd, before the jury entered the courtroom. He makes what I would suggest are self-serving statements, depending on whose position you're taking in this case, as well as some other very, very odd, strange statements. The state does not want to inject more evidence that no one's going to be able to explain. Ultimately, it's too confusing for the jury to untangle. Skylar's defense attorney, Michael Stewart, agreed the video was disturbing, but argued it showed a very distraught Skylar Nemitz, a person who is coming in and out of realization of what's happening. The video showed Skylar's emotional state, which had become an issue during the trial, Stewart said, as police officers described him as not showing any tears right after the shooting. In the end, the jury got to see the full footage of Skylar, handcuffed, from when he sat in the squad car and was then transported to the police station and later the Pierce County Jail. The prosecution played the video and audio to the jury, and then both sides called up witnesses to give insight. For the prosecution, it was Lakewood police officer Michael Robert who drove Skyler while the main camera on the windshield recorded him. Officer Robert testified he didn't ask Skyler any questions. It wasn't his place, since Skyler was on his way to be interviewed by detectives. Regardless, Skyler kept talking. The officer read him his Miranda rights and tried not to engage Skyler in a conversation. Called by the defense, Dr. Thomas Rowe, who had a master's degree in clinical psychology, was the expert to give insight into Skyler's reactions to trauma. Trauma is essentially the subjective experience of extreme stress that overwhelms one's ability to cope, Dr. Rowe said. Dr. Rowe spoke of the trauma that Skyler went through, the violent death of someone he loved before his eyes. He testified how trauma can affect people in different ways. On the outside, someone experiencing trauma can seem emotionless, everything internalized, while others show their grief and pain visibly on the outside. People's outward reactions to grief weren't always consistent, their behavior shifting from yelling to crying to silence or being calm. It was common to cry, Dr. Rowe said, and it was common also not to cry. Police reports and police testimony in court had kept bringing up Skyler's lack of tears. Dr. Rowe said, I have overtly had people come in for that was their presenting symptom, was I can't cry, I can't have tears. I don't know why, I try, but I can't. And oftentimes there's more to it than I just can't cry. And that's where you look at what's the blunted effect, and in this case, trauma. Under cross, Dr. Rowe also agreed that it was possible for somebody to put on a performance, to put on a show with their emotions. Dr. Rowe, who was paid $250 an hour, did not interview Skyler individually and talk with him. For the defense, their star witness, however, was Skyler Nemitz himself. He recounted for the jury what he says happened on October 16th, 2014.
I would say at least a half an hour after Danielle had told me to put the weapon away.
Okay.
I got off the couch and I went into the room to put this rifle away. I picked it up and not paying attention to where that weapon was pointing.
I'm going to ask you a question about that. Were there magazines inside the rifle?
No, there was not.
Okay. All right. And continue.
So I pick up a weapon that is in a state that the same way I left it, unloaded, to my knowledge. And I pick it up and...
Do you recall what hand you picked it up with?
I believe I picked it up with my left hand and handed it to my right.
Where were you standing?
This kind of motion.
He said he was standing directly behind Danielle.
It was close. I was inside of the room. And I was inside the room, and in my time, I was trying to clear the weapon. And I didn't do it correctly, and I made a terrible mistake. And the weapon went off in my hands. And it struck the back of my wife. And I hit her in the head. And she died.
He said he doesn't recall if the weapon was on safe or fire.
You know that you told the police that you switched it from safe to fire.
Yes, I did tell the police that I switched the safety selector from safe to fire.
Do you remember doing that?
I do not remember.
He said his memory of that night is hectic. After the gun went off, he said he was in a state of shock.
I didn't really realize what had happened because I'd picked up this weapon and there was a round in the chamber, obviously, that I wasn't aware of. And
did you pull the trigger, Skyler?
I don't recall pulling the trigger, but I know the trigger had to be pulled for the weapon to go off.
Okay. What happened when the weapon went off? Describe it to us.
Right after the weapon went off, there was smoke in the air, small amount, and gunpowder burned my nose as I breathed.
When the smoke cleared, he saw Danielle, and she wasn't moving.
I dropped the weapon, and I went up to my wife on the left side, and I saw her face, and my wife wasn't there anymore.
Did you see the gunshot wound?
I saw the gunshot wound.
Where did you see it?
I saw it on the back of her head.
Did you know she was dead?
Yeah, I knew she was dead.
Sorry.
I knew she was dead. And I didn't know what to do.
Dressed in a light gray suit and salmon-colored striped tie, Skyler held the weapon in his hands and showed the jury how he held the gun that day. On cross-examination, the prosecutor grilled him on his previous statements to law enforcement.
So you told the detectives, not only was it unlocked in a different state than when you had left to go to Yakima 19 days earlier, but you also made sure that everything was in the same place and the weapons were unloaded.
I didn't actually inspect the weapons, sir.
How would you know they're unloaded?
I didn't check to see if they were unloaded, sir.
Well, did you tell the detectives precisely this? There was nothing missing, nothing was loaded?
It appears that way, yes, sir.
Okay. And how could you know that to tell the detectives if you didn't check them?
I'm not sure, sir.
The prosecutor then pointed out the number one rule of gun safety, to which Skyler agreed. Always presume a weapon is loaded.
If I'm handed a weapon, I would presume that it was loaded. But if I'm picking up my weapon that I was the last person to touch, I would presume that it was in the same state that I left it, sir.
Okay, so let's talk about that for a second.
Okay.
You go to Yakima, you say you leave your wife a weapon that she's never fired, correct?
That's correct.
You left that weapon with the bolt forward and on fire, correct?
From what I can remember, sir.
From what you can remember, that's what you told the detectives as well.
I understand that's what I told the detectives, sir.
Okay. Would you be lying to the detectives?
No, I wasn't lying to the detectives. I was just trying to figure it out for myself at the time.
Okay, we can actually go farther than that, Mr. Nemitz. Would you ever leave a weapon in your home in any condition other than bolt forward, on fire, unloaded?
Well, sir, that was the only weapon with a bolt like that.
Didn't answer my question.
Can you ask it again then, please, sir?
Did you ever leave any weapon in a condition that somebody could pick it up and shoot it and kill somebody?
No, I wouldn't, sir.
Trial testimony lasted 12 days until the court took a pre-planned break in February for several days. On February 16th, 2016, while the jury was still on recess, Pierce County prosecuting attorney Mark Lindquist was back on Nancy Grace again, discussing the motive on the nationally televised show. Was this an accident? Was it intentional? And that's why the defendant's experience with firearms is critical to the case, he said. And it's his actions combined with his statements and his experience with firearms that add up to murder rather than an accident. When court was back in session, Skyler's defense attorney complained to the judge and asked for a mistrial. He was furious that the prosecutor would go on national TV to talk about his client's guilt and credibility, calling it a first-class hatchet job. It's hard to know if it's just terrible lawyering or terrible TV, he said. Judge Jack Nevin asked the jury if anyone had been exposed to the media about the trial during the trial's break. No one reported seeing anything. The judge ruled against allowing a mistrial. It took the jury 7 days to deliberate. On March 3rd, 2016, they announced their verdict. Instead of finding Skyler guilty of murder, they found him guilty of a lesser charge of manslaughter. Before sentencing, Skyler spoke to the court. They were my actions and my actions alone, and I take full responsibility for them. I accept the verdict that was given to me by the jury, and I accept any punishment that you will give me. I can't accept the actions that I've done. I was reckless and negligent, and for that I will pay. But most of all, I'm sorry to Danielle. At his March 25th sentencing, Danielle's family members spoke about Danielle's absence during the holidays and how they missed hearing her laughter. Their anger at Skylar went deep. In a letter to the court, Danielle's great aunt wrote, "Your Honor, if you recall when Skylar was handed the gun during his testimony, he handled it like the trained professional he is. Not once did he point the weapon towards any one person in this courtroom, held the gun down like it was second nature to him. Many times we have heard from the defendant's mom to have compassion for Skylar. But please, tell me where was the compassion when he was screwing around, messing up the crime scene, discarding alcohol bottles, hiding gun cartridges, shoving the gun in the closet while his wife lay lifeless in a chair. I wonder how many times he walked by her and looked over at her. I'm sorry, but compassion isn't running through my mind right now." She asked the judge for the maximum sentence. Skylar's defense attorney, Michael Stewart, asked for mercy for his client. "The pain in this room is palpable. The loss of Danny is ever present throughout this case. Every good thing said about her was true. She was all of those things. She was an absolute bright spark. My client has tremendous remorse, and he's sad and struggles every day with what he's done. This is a good man, and this is an unbelievable mistake." Skylar Nemitz was sentenced to 13 and a half years in prison, the maximum allowed. After the trial, Pierce County Prosecutor Mark Lindquist was admonished for his comments on Nancy Grace from the Washington State Bar Association's disciplinary board. They wrote in their December 2018 records that Lindquist's comments on the show, quote, "went beyond facts contained in the public record and caused a potential injury to the integrity of the legal process." In a voluntary settlement, he was fined $750. That same year, he was ousted from his prosecutor job when voters rejected his bid for a third term in the November 2018 elections. And as for the defendant, here's the latest update on Skylar Nemitz. Skylar filed an appeal, but in July 2020, the Washington State Court of Appeals rejected his petition. Quote, "Skylar Nemitz claims that the court abused its discretion by failing to meaningfully consider his youth as a mitigating factor before determining that no basis existed for an exceptional sentence below the standard range." According to the decision written by the three-person panel, "we disagree and deny his petition." And that's all for this episode. As always, I'd love to know what you think about this case. What do you think happened to Danielle Nemitz? Was she intentionally murdered by her husband, or was it an accident? Do you agree with the verdict and the sentencing? Let me know by joining the conversation on Instagram at Court Junkie, on Twitter at Court Junkie Pod, or by emailing me at podcast@courtjunkie.com. This episode was researched and written by Gabrielle Rousson. If you'd like to hear these episodes without the ads and get access to additional Court Junkie bonus content, go to courtjunkie.com/support, which will redirect you to my Patreon page. Don't forget to follow me on YouTube at youtube.com/courtjunkie. And finally, I want to let you know that I'm taking a small break for the holidays. This will be the last regular episode for the year, and I will be back with the next regular episode on Monday, January 18th. So that will be three Mondays with no new episodes. But I will be releasing an end-of-the-year recap episode for you during that time, so be on the lookout for that. I hope you all have a safe and wonderful holiday and a much, much better 2021 for all of us. Thanks again for listening. Until next time. Support for this podcast comes from Pluto TV. Need an escape? Drop into Pluto TV for a world of free TV. Stream hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and shows, all for free. Yeah, for free. No subscriptions, no fees. Imagine 24/7 channels of Narcos, CSI, Star Trek, Survivor, and everything else from hit movies to binge-worthy TV shows, the latest news, live sports, comedy, and more. What are you waiting for? Download the free Pluto TV app for Android, iPhone, Roku, and Fire TV and start streaming now. Pluto TV, drop in, watch free.